It's On Second Thought. I'm Adam Ragusa in this week for Celeste Headlee. Georgia has been a red state since the 1990s, meaning the state reliably votes Republican in presidential contests. Political analysts have been predicting for years that due to demographic changes, Georgia might go purple, that is, become a swing state where a red Republican and a blue Democrat would have an equal shot. The year in which Georgia would go purple has been a matter of debate among prognosticators, but 2020 is about as early as anyone dared to guess until Trump happened. How might this unprecedented election season alter the course of Georgia's political evolution? Here to weigh the odds is Daniel Franklin. He's a professor of political science at Georgia State University. Good morning, Daniel.
Good morning.
And with us still is Andra Gillespie of Emory University, also a political science professor. Thanks for sticking around, Andra.
No problem.
In 2014, MSNBC host Chris Hayes reported on the possibility of Georgia turning a little bit bluer. Here is Hayes providing some historical context on how the state has voted in past presidential elections.
Since 1964, Georgia has voted for Republicans in every election with four exceptions. Infamous segregationist George Wallace in 1968, local boy made good Jimmy Carter in 1976 and 1980, and Bill Clinton in 1992.
And then, of course, Georgia went for Bob Dole in 96, and it's been a red state ever since. Daniel Franklin, right off the bat, do you think it's possible that Georgia's electoral votes go to Hillary Clinton this year?
It is possible, and one of the things to look for in this race is to see where the campaigns go to do their campaigning. If we see either one of the candidates down in Georgia doing anything other than fundraising, the Republicans are in real trouble because this should be a reliably red state. I noticed today that Hillary was campaigning in Nebraska. I'm a little surprised by that because Nebraska shouldn't be in play.
Andra, same question to you. Is it possible that Georgia goes Clinton this year?
I'm probably right now a little less hopeful about that. And so this is not my taking one side or the other. But the reason why I would be less hopeful about that is, one, we don't poll often enough in the state to have any reliable measures that I would say. So the last polls that I've seen in Georgia ended in May. So I think I would need
And they were showing a statistical tie, right?
And they were showing a tie, which is what gave Democrats hope in the state. So I think we would need to do kind of more reliable testing in the state in order to know for sure what was going on in the state. You know, there are a couple of things that I think mitigate, against that happening. I would still say Republicans have the advantage and that it's still their state to lose. I would expect that the drop-off in support for Democratic candidates that we would have anticipated kind of in a post-Obama election is probably not going to happen. And so you could see a Democratic candidate getting Obama type of numbers in this state. So the same way that Obama was able to mobilize the African-American vote, I would see Hillary Clinton being able to put parts of that coalition together. If the Georgia Republicans unite around Donald Trump, and they haven't completely united against around Donald Trump, but they've done a decent enough job of being able to do that, I could still see Trump winning the state by single-digit margins the same way that John McCain and Mitt Romney did.
Dan, do you look at the polling any differently from how Andra looks at it?
Well, there was a fairly recent poll, the WSB poll, just came out a few days ago, and it showed Hillary down by 1 point. Now, the problem with the poll is—
With a margin of error of probably 3 or 4, 5 points, right?
Right. And the problem with the poll is it's what's called a likely voter poll. So there's a model that they're trying to look at. They're trying to predict who will actually vote. And the problem with that is it's kind of a moving target. On the other hand, the likely voter polls are, you know, pretty accurate. And also, I think if these polls are off, they're going to be off to the favor of the Democrats, because if Trump's done one thing, he's motivated Hispanic voters. And the fastest growing population in this state is the Hispanic population. And
we'll get back to that.
Yeah.
Andra, do you want to just start explaining to us what are these demographic changes that we have been talking about? Georgia's headed to a big milestone in the year 2018, right?
So when Democrats have been looking toward 2018, 2020, 2024, what they're looking at are changes in demographics. So they're looking at reverse migration of African-Americans back into a state that already had a large African-American population. We've seen exponential growth in the Latino and Asian-American populations. And in most recent presidential elections, these groups are voting over 70% Democratic. You also see an influx of urban whites who might not be attached to conservative politics. Perhaps they're from places outside of the South. Perhaps they hold more liberal values. And so this urban core of liberal whites, African Americans, Latinos, and Asian Americans is assumed to be the growth market in votes, as opposed to whites who have traditionally voted Republican. And so if the populations that are more inclined to vote Democratic vote, you know, continue to do so, and their populations are growing and the white Republican population is shrinking, then eventually that should make Georgia more competitive.
And the year 2018 is the year at which demographers believe that Georgia will become a so-called majority-minority state. Dan Franklin, let's talk more specifically about those Latino voters. Donald Trump has fired up a lot of populations with the various things that he has said over the course of his campaign. He's said some of his most potent things about Latinos. Tell us about Georgia's Latino voters. Fastest growing segment of the population. How are they reacting to Trump? Are they all repulsed by him?
Well, the first of all, there's a couple things to remember. The turnout in Hispanic voters, among Hispanic voters, is generally, especially Hispanic voters of Latin American descent, has been generally pretty low, a lot lower than other minority populations, particularly African American populations, for a couple of reasons. First of all, because they come from an immigrant background, and you know, it takes a couple of generations to get acculturated to American politics. In the countries where their families came from, voting is either dangerous or meaningless. Yeah. And so, you know, it's the same thing that would be said for Asian voters, new immigrants from Asia. So the immigrant population is hard to mobilize. Trump's mobilized them, and the expectations are that they go sort of from 50% turnout, when the normal turnout in presidential general elections is around 65%, that they may go from 50% to 60%. And while that makes a lot of difference nationally, it'll particularly make a lot of difference in states that have larger Hispanic populations. For example, Arizona is in play. In fact, a lot of people think Arizona may go blue this time, which is, you know, puts McCain in a lot of trouble as he's running for Senate there. I don't think the Hispanic population is large enough in Georgia, even if there's a higher rate of turnout. I also think there's going to be some slippage in the African-American vote because of Obama's not at the top of the ticket. So that's why I don't think we're going to have a surprise this time.
My guests are Georgia State political science professor Daniel Franklin, who you just heard. Also with us is Emory political science professor Andre Gillespie. We're talking about whether it's possible for Georgia to turn from a red state to a purple state as early as this year. Listeners, we'd love to hear from you. Do you think that Georgia could go Clinton? Tweet us at OST Talk or join our conversation happening right now at facebook.com/onsecondthoughtradio. Georgia House Minority Leader Stacey Abrams launched a group called the New Georgia Project to register new voters. It says it signed up about 69,000 voters before the 2014 elections. Now the goal is to register 170,000 more before the November election. Former NAACP President Ben Jealous told MSNBC that registering new voters is critical to the Democratic cause, registering new voters of color in particular. Let's listen.
There are 600,000 unregistered black people in the state and 230,000 unregistered Asians and Latinos on top of that. If we could just sign up 750,000 of them, it would be almost impossible for the Republicans to win again.
Andre, how realistic do you think it is that hundreds of thousands of new Georgia voters could be registered before November?
Well, Stacey Abrams is my state legislator, and I know people who work in the New Georgia Project. That being said, they, I think, are taking a long view, and I think they recognize that this is a long view. So I think it's absolutely important to register people to vote. But registering people to vote doesn't guarantee that that's actually going to get them out to the polls. So there's a difference between voter registration and voter mobilization. And the problem is when you have new registered voters, they tend to be unfamiliar with the process, unsure of themselves. They're actually going to be more likely to not show up and vote than seasoned voters. So you have to marry voter mobilization and GOTV with voter registration. The people at the New Georgia Project know that, but what that also does is that should temper the enthusiasm for demographic shifts automatically leading to a change. Doesn't say that it's not going to happen. This is a crazy election year where every prediction that we've made has gone wrong so far.
Yeah.
But in general, I would tell people to kind of temper their enthusiasm. I mean, part of the issue with 2018 is knowing that especially people a few years ago were banking on 18, 19, 20-year-old Latinos turning out to vote immediately. Well, that's just not how the life cycle process works. People usually don't hit consistent voting patterns until they're much older and much more settled into their lives, into their adult lives, I should say. And so I think that the same thing needs to be done here. But one of the things that's actually really important is part of the reason why Latinos and Asian Americans in particular don't turn out to vote is that they are actually less likely to report actually being directly mobilized by any group. So if there's any lesson to be taken from this, it's that campaigns need to reach out to Asian American and Latino voters. And I should point out that in the Trump or in the Georgia delegation at the Republican convention, they included Asian American and Latino delegates too, and alternates. So, you know, this isn't, you know, despite Donald Trump's rhetoric, there are people of color who are going to support him. And so, that should be taken as a response from both sides to make sure that they do everything that they can to get their message out and to try to persuade people as to the merits of their candidate.
And also not to forget white voters. Here's here's Stacey Abrams herself, Georgia House Minority Leader, talking about why it's important for the Democratic Party to not marginalize or forget white Democrats while trying to diversify the party at the same time. Let's listen.
As a minority, I understand what it means to make sure that you don't make the minority feel oppressed. And if you want white Democrats, if you want white people to be Democrats, you have to create a space so that their values are recognized, because their values are not that divergent from everyone else.
Dan Franklin of Georgia State, do you think it's possible that the Democratic Party could this year win not just some white voters? Sure, they're going to get some urban, educated white voters, but working-class white voters, or is that a block that is forever lost to the party?
I don't think it's forever lost for the party. If one thing that the Trump and the Sanders phenomenon have shown us, it is that working-class voters are very unhappy. And while we may not be able to adopt their solutions that they might want to solve their problems, we're going to have to think. I think it is going to be the challenge of the next generation of politicians and how to make life better for working class people. Now, as far as mobilizing voters in the state, the problem that the Democratic Party in the state is going to have is that the nature of our electoral college system is such that presidential campaigns generally have a first things first philosophy. In other words, you rank order the states in terms of how likely you are to win them and how many votes they have. And so it is not the case that the Democrats need Georgia to win the election. So unless
Georgia has 16 electoral votes? I mean, that's a lot, right? I think there's only
lot,
seven or eight states that have more.
But at the end of the day, you don't really need them to win the general election. If it becomes clear in the last few weeks of the campaign that Hillary's going to claim and that she's going to win easily, then she may go for a landslide. And the nice things about a landslide are that you can maybe pull some congressional candidacies along with you, although coattails have been very, very short in recent years. And so I think the problem is that the Georgians may be motivated, but whether the National Party is motivated, that's something else.
So, I mean, I'll add here that I know that DeBose Porter did meet with officials at the DNC trying to convince the DNC that Georgia was going to be competitive and that there needed to be investment in this state. So we'll see if we actually see the fruits of that in terms of visits, in terms of advertising, in terms of campaign infrastructure. But, you know, the state party is trying to make that case to the DNC.
Yeah, I should say DeBose Porter is the chair of the state Democratic Party. Let's look down ballot from the White House race. There's a key matchup between Republican Senator Johnny Isaacson, longtime incumbent, and Democratic challenger Jim Barksdale. Dan, 3 months to go. How are things looking in that contest?
Well, I haven't seen any polling on it, but the reason why you don't see a lot of polling on it is it's not assumed to be competitive. Also, polls cost a lot of money, and the Barksdale campaign may be short. And the Isaacson campaign may not think that they need to do it. The problem the Democrats have in Georgia is in the last cycle, they ran very strong campaigns at both the gubernatorial and the senatorial level. They ran Michelle Nunn, a daughter of a popular senator and grandson of a president, and they got trounced. Yeah. And so the problem that the Democrats have is recruiting people who will run. What's the point in running? What's the point in spending and raising and spending $20 million which is what you would need to run a legitimate statewide race in the state.
Right. And Barksdale is an independently wealthy guy, so it's not so much of a sacrifice for him.
Right, and you've got to find people who are willing to spend their own money, and then you have to make sacrifices in terms of their, say, their experience, and maybe, you know, their name recognition, that sort of thing. So I think that what's going to happen is as the state turns, there's one year there's going to be a surprise. Somebody's going to pick off somebody. It could be this year, although I doubt it. I think Johnny Isaacson's very, very popular, and I think it's going to be very, very hard to beat. But one year there's going to be a surprise, and once that surprise happens, then the floodgates will open. People will begin to, more powerful candidates will begin to line up to run for positions down ticket.
Yeah, Andre, last thought goes to you. What effect, if any, do you see this bonkers presidential election this year having on down ballot races in Georgia?
So, you know, I agree with Dan that I suspect Johnny Isaacson's going to win. Democrats have talked about trying to punish him for tacitly endorsing Donald Trump and hoping that they might be able to make some inroads. I doubt that that's going to happen. I mean, I think the key here is what Stacey Abrams was talking about when she was talking about white voters, because the problem in 2014 was not minority voters. They turned out and voted the way that one would expect them to, particularly African Americans. The issue was that they did horribly among white voters. So the key for the DPG is to try to figure out how to reach out to white voters and to make them feel included in the big tent.
We'll have to leave it there. Daniel Franklin is a political science professor at Georgia State. Andre Gillespie is a political science professor at Emory. Thank you both so much. Good analysis.
Thanks.
Thank you.